Welcome to the 2007 Clinton Global Initiative Climate Sessions. Along with hundreds of other people, many in this room, I've been working to put together the program that you will see over the next couple of days and the remarkable commitments that are going to be announced. It's been just an amazing group. The people in this room are simply spectacular. I mean, one of the spectacular people, just to choose one, Mike Eckhart, who does amazing work on renewable energy, just stopped me and said, you know, it's not my style to get pumped up. I am really pumped up. This is such a great event. And, you know, I've been hearing that a lot from people in the past couple of days, in the past couple of weeks, and I think it's going to be a very special couple of days, if we all make it a special couple of days. I want to thank... a number of people. I want to start by thanking the sponsor of our track, the Julian Robertson Foundation, and Bill Goodall, who's here. A big hand for them, please. We are privileged to have just a tremendous, tremendous advisory board helping us plan this program and shape commitments, and I want to recognize all of them. I want to recognize Francis Beinecke, Carol Browner, Eileen Clausen, Debbie Dingell, Muhammad Al-Ashri, Yuriko Kawaguchi, Vinod Khosla, Fred Krupp, Julian Martin Lefevre, Bill Riley, Jim Rogers, and then I want to save a very special recognition for a man who has been on our advisory board for the past 3 years. He is always there when I call him or email him around the world. In addition to helping with this, he has just managed to pull together the world's leading assessment on the science of global warming, Patchy Pachauri. Please, a big hand for him and for all our members of the advisory board. And believe me, no words would be enough to thank the three remarkable deputies who are helping to put together this program. Many of you have been in constant touch with them over the past weeks and months. A big round of applause, please, for Michael Terrell, PJ Simmons, and Amy Christensen. I have my reading glasses here, which I managed to make this through without it. So after the president's announcement, I'm thrilled by that. I am particularly pleased to be able to recognize an opening speaker here who has served as a governor for only a short period of time in the Sunshine State, but has already written quite a record of leadership on the issue that we're talking about here. He has a distinguished background before taking the office of governor as state attorney general and other positions in state government. Ladies and gentlemen, Charlie Crist.
Thank you, David, very much. I appreciate your introduction, and it's a pleasure to be here. A great conservationist named Teddy Roosevelt was a man who believed in doing things and taking action. In fact, he said, the man who matters or makes a difference is the doer. Well, so is the woman who does that, obviously. But it was a poem called The Man in the Arena, and that you have to be a person of action in order to make a difference and get things done. I want you to know that as a governor of Florida, no state is more vulnerable than Florida to the catastrophes triggered by global climate change. And I will stand with anyone, regardless of party, obviously, to make sure. It's a good man. To make sure that we continue to push this issue. It is that important that we all work together to do what is right, not only for my state and our country, but the world. And that's why you all are here. So I really want to thank you. I want to thank you for taking of your time to be here and to be committed to this issue. In Florida, we are working to reduce greenhouse gases, and I wanted to share some of that with you today. We want to be more energy efficient. We want to pursue renewable energy resources, like solar energy. As I've said before, after all, we are the Sunshine State. What better place to have solar energy than Florida? I had the privilege of hosting a similar summit in Miami back in July, and we heard from some of the strongest voices on this issue. My friend, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, has been a great leader and is a great man. Robert Kennedy Jr. Was kind enough to come down and give us his time. Theodore Roosevelt IV was with us. Vinod Khosla, who's just a great man and a great guy, And he's doing so many things related to solar energy that we're announcing in Florida. State government, I believe, is leading by example. We have to. It's our duty to. And so I'm proud of what we're doing in Florida. And I wanted to tell you what we're doing in regard to greenhouse gases. We plan to reduce our emissions in Florida by 10% by the year 2012, 25% by the year 2017, and 40% by the year 2025. We want to make sure that our vehicles are energy efficient. In fact, the car they drive me around in Tallahassee, Florida, our capital, is powered by ethanol. We think it's very important to utilize solar panels at the governor's mansion where the people let me reside. We have just installed solar panels. I think it's important to lead by example if you can, and all of you do. And we're trying to do the same thing in Florida. It's also requiring a reduction of emissions by electric utilities in the following fashion: to 2000 levels by 2017, to 1990 levels by 2025, and by 80% of 1990 levels by 2050. I plan to follow in Governor Schwarzenegger's great footsteps. We want to make sure that cars sold in the Sunshine State are more energy efficient, pending approval from the Environmental Protection Agency. We want to make sure that appliances that are sold in Florida are more efficient, 15% more at least, and that new buildings will also be 15% more efficient in Florida. We are encouraging our Public Service Commission, which oversees our utilities in our state, to make sure that they increase the use of renewable energy to 20%. We can do this by focusing on solar and wind energy. And Florida Power and Light, FPL Group, announced this morning, is certainly a step in the right direction, announcing the largest solar energy plant in the country. We're also reaching beyond our own borders, joining with Germany, the United Kingdom, and other nations, increasing climate-friendly trade. In fact, this November, I will lead a trade mission of Floridians to Brazil. One of the main focuses of that mission will be to focus on ethanol development. Brazil has done a great job. Almost all of their vehicles are powered by ethanol. And almost all of that ethanol is created from sugar. Well, in the Sunshine State, we have a lot of sugar. And we have a lot of citrus. And citrus waste and sugar can be much more efficient ways to produce ethanol than even corn. And as you're probably aware, all the products that utilize corn are becoming more expensive. So we want to have alternatives. We formed an action team on energy for climate change. 21 leaders from state and local governments, led by my Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection, Mike Soule, are coming together to present proposals for our legislative session next year. They are experts from the environmental, business, and research communities, our universities, shaping Florida's energy policy for our future, and recommending ways to strengthen public-private partnerships. Government alone, though, can't do this. Government alone needs help. We need to reverse the effects of climate change. Everyone must be involved. All of you are involved, but you have to encourage others. You have to recruit more. I clearly think that we have gone beyond a tipping point in this issue. I believe that people have finally woken up and understand that this is not a political issue, this is not a Democrat issue, this is not a Republican issue, this is a world issue for each and every one of us to take a duty and to recognize that duty. And we're trying to do that. That's okay, go ahead. We're trying to do that in Florida. Last month, Florida League of Mayors unanimously approved the Mayor's Green City Accord. Florida businesses are eager to embrace climate-friendly strategies. They are realizing what I have realized and others are realizing. There is gold in green. Reporter just asked me as I was coming in here, you know, is this going to hurt business? Is this going to be challenging? Is it going to be tough economically? And I said, no, it's not. It's creating opportunities, entrepreneurial opportunities for those who have the vision to get these things done. If you step into the arena as an entrepreneur, like Florida Power and Light is doing in my state, there is money to be made by doing good things. And there's nothing wrong with that. They are establishing a wind farm in our state. biomass plant, more solar capabilities. Universities and scientists are researching ways to make alternative energy, making ethanol from citrus waste and sugar cane, as I mentioned before, and producing power, believe it or not, from ocean waves. We Floridians enjoy a lifestyle that is connected to our state's beauty, and she's beautiful. I would encourage you to come and visit and spend a lot of money while you're there. But we enjoy this lifestyle. We have 85 million people come to visit the Sunshine State every year. Tourism is, in fact, our number one industry, thanks to weather, beaches, fishing, and our great people. It's easy to see why Florida is one of the fastest growing states in America. We have 1,000 new residents every day. Every single day come to Florida. Our taxes are low, our weather is good, and our people are great. 70% of Florida's electricity is generated by fossil fuels. Our Creator has given us the gift of creation. I refer to the beauty of Florida as God's art, and it is. And recently I was in Utah at Sundance with Mr. Redford, and it was equally beautiful. And I think that we, as human beings, have a duty to the Creator to protect it. I've met with rabbis and priests and pastors about this issue too, and they get it. They may not agree on how all this stuff came into being, but they can agree that we need to protect it, and we need to be vigilant about it, and it's important that we do. In fact, that was one of the main messages that Robert Kennedy Jr. gave us in Miami in July. Florida's second largest industry is agriculture, and it could be devastated by climate change if we don't do something about it and do something about it now. Currently, more than 270 different crops are grown in Florida. We are the 10th largest agricultural state in the nation. Many scientists link climate change to violent weather patterns. As you may have noticed, in some recent years, we had a few hurricanes in my state. In 2004 and 2005, it was a record. Florida alone was hit by 7 hurricanes. 215 people lost their lives. The price tag was $36 billion. We understand this is important from a very tangible way. Rising sea levels are another threat, especially to coastal areas like Florida. We have 1,350 miles of coastline in the Sunshine State. Scientists estimate that sea levels will rise 5 inches during the next 25 years and reduce by 20 inches by the year 2100, and rather get to 20 inches. Reduction affects the global climate change, and it's no easy task to attack it, but we will. I am an optimist, and I believe that with your help and God's blessing and the people that are coming together in this room, in this conference, and all over the country and the world, we will make the difference that will save our planet, that will protect our people, and will make our Creator proud. God bless you for being here, and thank you for being so kind to listen.
Thank you, Governor, for your leadership on this issue. in the next couple of days, we're going to hear about dozens of inspiring commitments. We've already heard about 4 this morning in our opening plenary. But here in our climate sessions, and we're going to hear about commitments that are literally worth billions of dollars of investment in clean energy. We're going to hear about commitments to educate the public about the need for action. We're going to hear about commitments to promote energy efficiency, to save countless thousands of hectares of forests. And it's going to be quite remarkable, I believe. But CGI is about not just promises made, but promises kept. It's not just, to say the least, about what happens here on this stage. What happens here on this stage is only the beginning and the launching of something that is much more fundamental in the world as a whole. And as I've had conversations with people about the Clinton Global Initiative over the past year, there is one question that I get more than any other, and some of you have probably asked it to me, which is, what is Sir Richard doing to follow up on his big commitment from last year anyway? And so here to answer that question, I am pleased to present the CEO of Virgin Fuels, Shai Weiss.
Hey, good afternoon. So first of all, thank you for inviting me to share with you our experiences in the past year or so. Last year, in fact, Richard did stand on stage and did commit $3 billion or up to $3 billion from the proceeds from the transportation group over the next 10 years. That's a very, very big commitment, and I think it qualifies probably as the most expensive lunch I'll ever buy. Thank you for hosting me. Seriously, so what we've done really at the Virgin Group, we've focused on three big areas. We've engaged our staff, our customers, our partners, including Boeing, GE, Pratt & Whitney, and others, to find ways to address climate change and combat global warming. We call it cool global warming. That's really the statement that we're using. We've reached out to entrepreneurs worldwide to come up with innovative solutions to this vast problem. That was launched in February last year, or this year actually. That was the Virgin Earth Challenge, and I'll talk a bit about that. And we at Virgin Fuels, now named Virgin Green Fund, are investing in companies that have made it their sole mission to make a lot of money by reducing greenhouse gases, but also, you know, providing alternative energy from resources that can be renewed and managed effectively. And then on the other side of that is also making sure that when we consume energy, water, we do this effectively and efficiently. A bit more color. We've appointed, the Virgin Group has just appointed an independent advisor on sustainable development. This is a person that is really tracking the journey of our products and services and the people that make them and consume them, and really is tasked with coming up with a solution that will make each of our companies the most sustainable company in their respective sector, be it transportation, communications, media, health, and the many other things that we operate in. Virgin Atlantic, which of course is the big and very good carrier, and I'm sure you're all flying our airlines and no others, is continuing to evaluate what to do in the near term until major breakthroughs are done. Specifically, they have a slogan where they're putting the planes on the diet. That is not the customers, but just the planes. So they're taking out all the extra weight that they can from the airplanes and replacing, you know, all the bins that we have there, for example, with lighter made from interesting composite materials. They're deep cleaning the aircraft engines so that they become more efficient and more and more and more. But the big one that was announced also this year by Sir Richard Branson was the plan to buy 15 Dreamliners from Boeing. The Dreamliners will reduce greenhouse gas emissions, of course, but also reduce the fuel by 27% with respect to the planes that they are replacing. Now, that's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. You can't replace airlines all the time, but that's something we're doing. Virgin Trains in the UK is going to run the fleet, the Voyager fleet, on biodiesel, and the stations that we operate use 20% of their energy or electricity from alternative resources. As I said, in February 2007, Richard and Vice President Gore announced the launch of the Virgin Earth Challenge. It's a $25 million prize to an individual or group that are able to demonstrate a commercially viable way of reducing greenhouse gases in a material way, sustainable way, with a long-standing impact on the environment. On a smaller scale, we've launched a fund which is investing in small enterprises, specifically in Africa and other continents in which we operate, which is funding social businesses that provide people with access to low-carbon technologies, but also give them the ability to improve their livelihood and the livelihood of the community, which is a very interesting thing. And then just last month, we launched Virgin Green Fund, which is really a continuation of Virgin Fuels. We figured that there's so much more to do on the investing side, and just figuring out what one technology is not going to work. We have to do really a whole basket of technologies and companies and products to make a dent. I'll give you three examples of companies that we've invested in recently. One is a thin film solar company in California, which has more efficient, cheaper solar panels that can be easily mounted on rooftops, good for any commercial enterprises in California, definitely in Florida. We've invested in a lighting company headquartered in Tennessee with an R&D facility in Israel, And they're basically bringing in the electronic brain power into mostly an analog space. They can reduce electricity by about 60%. And just so you know, the United States consumes 20% of its electricity goes to lighting, just to give you and so much more can be done on that front. And then a company in Pasadena, California, where we hope to produce butanol competitively. And butanol is a superior fuel in the sense that it has much higher energy content, can be blended at higher rates, and of course can be transported in the existing infrastructure. So I hope I've proven that, you know, we're serious about this. The money spent is considerable. The time and effort, amazing as well. But I think the most important thing is at the group itself, we feel that we've made true on the commitment, and we intend to do so next year. And it has a positive impact on our bottom line, which is so important if we're to continue to doing this in a real big way. Not just the bottom line, but it also galvanizes the employees, the customers, the staff around something so big. And we're trying to basically reverse the harm that each and every one of us is inflicting on the planet on a day-to-day basis in a big way through our commitment. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Syed, to you and to your whole team. And you hereby have a standing invitation to come back next year to report on the progress in the next 12 months. Climate change is an environmental issue. It's an economic issue and a spiritual issue as well. And one person who has come to CGI, made a commitment, and followed through is Reverend Jim Ball, and he's going to tell us about his experience.
Well, first, I want to thank the governor for his leadership. If he gets tired of being governor, I think he could be a pastor if he'd like to. So thank you for recognizing the creator. I'm Jim Ball with the Evangelical Environmental Network. First, I'd like to thank the Energy Foundation, Rockefeller Brothers, Pew, and the National Religious Partnership, because without their support, we wouldn't be able to do our work. So thanks to those folks. This is my second CGI, and before coming last year, I thought long and hard about it because I worried that our conservative opponents would make some political hay out of it. Well, I'm back because it's time to move beyond letting such attacks keep us from moving forward. I found that the CGI attracts the doers. You are the let's get it done crowd, a transpartisan crowd, if I may, moving beyond ideology. So I'm glad to be here. The honest truth is that on this issue of climate change, my community, the evangelical Christian community, is probably the hardest nut to crack. So you can take heart in the progress that we've made. In February of 2006, we launched the Evangelical Climate Initiative, or the ECI, which was a historic effort because it was the first time that a group of senior evangelical leaders came together on a controversial environmental issue. The Evangelical Climate Initiative, or ECI, has generated considerable backlash and criticism in my community, including public efforts to get one of our leaders fired. But those efforts themselves have backfired, and we've been able to continue to move forward. We currently have over 100 ECI leaders, and we've just recently launched a recruitment drive with a goal of having over 200 leaders by April. We continue to educate our ECI leaders and keep them up to date. They are ready to work with and speak to those in power to get our country moving in the right direction. We have developed a document, 10 Principles for Federal Policy on Climate Change, which articulates a conservative approach to solving this problem. Since this spring, our team has met with 54 congressional offices, primarily House Republicans, to share our message and establish relationships. I also testified, along with other religious community colleagues, before the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, explaining our views to Senator Inhofe, among others. Wasn't too successful. Governor, you're going to have to work on Senator Inhofe, okay? We have also conducted a national poll of evangelicals, which found that 70% believe global warming is a problem for future generations. 54%, Governor, listen to this, 54% are more likely to support a candidate who supports action. And 54% believe action should be taken even at high economic cost. My organization, the Evangelical Environmental Network, is also working through the National Religious Partnership for the Environment with our colleagues from other religious communities to ensure that the poor are protected from both the impacts of climate change itself, but also from any regressive economic consequences of climate legislation. We welcome the support of others in this fight, and if you're interested, let me know. Finally, again, take heart. If we can get it done, you can get it done. It's all hands on deck time. Thank you.
In the course of working on this year's conference and last year's, I have met many energetic people, but none with more energy for this issue than Wendy Abrams, who has seized upon a public education program that is already getting this message out, and she will be the next person to tell us about her commitment.
Thank you. Last year I was here with a certificate and an idea, and that was about it. I had no sponsors, nothing to this project, and I'm happy to be back a year later to announce that we've actually completed this idea. But with my friend John Waldenberg, who's here, we were both here last year, had an idea. The idea was how do we close the gap between what everyone in this room knows about climate change and the seriousness, and how do we close that gap between the scientific community and the general public who seems to tune out. And I think we've come a long way in the past year or two since we came up with this idea. But the general public seems to tune out the idea of climate change because they feel helpless and hopeless and overwhelmed with the idea. Even if they believe that it's happening, they feel that I can't do anything about it anyway. So how do we get to these people who don't read the books or don't even go to the museums? And the idea was to put something right in front of them, use public art as the medium with which to capture their attention. And so following the tradition of Chicago, that we had the cows on parade, we came up with the idea of cool globes. And the idea was to have these 5-foot diameter globes, the symbolism being that the globes are so big, as the problem of climate change is so big, that you can't avoid it. You have to confront this. But at the same time, each globe was decorated by a different artist to showcase a solution to climate change. So the sense is there's so many things we can do about this. Unlike the cows on parade, which were scattered all over the city and which were just kind of fun and quirky, this was shown as an exhibition, and the globes were shown together. Again, the message, we didn't want somebody to just stumble across a solar power globe, because solar power in and of itself is not the solution, but it's solar power and geothermal and turn down your thermostat and energy efficiency and on and on and on. Originally, when I went to the Field Museum, which is the Natural History Museum in Chicago, and the mayor to ask them to partner with me on this project, and fortunately, they both agreed to do so. Again, kind of following in the CGI example, that this should be a collaboration of government, NGOs, and corporate community, because we need all three of those constituencies to solve the problem of climate change. So I wanted this not to be funded solely by foundations or solely to be a city project, but to have everybody at the table. And the other idea being we want to show off all the projects. So many, you know, I did the easy part. I'm advertising all the hard work that you're doing here. And it's the companies or the NGOs that are doing hard work, we want to let the public know about them. So originally we thought we'd have an exhibition of 25 or 30 globes, because that meant I had to get 25 or 30 sponsors, which we did, and it just grew. I started having sponsors come to me. Ultimately, I promised my husband we'd kept it at 100, and we ended up with 125. But we had internationally acclaimed artists, Jim Dine, Jaime Plensa, and it really grew. It became a community rallying point. The mayor was terrific. We had an opening with the mayor, a lot of the corporate leaders, and, you know, 1,000 school children. We did programs with the Chicago Public School. We developed a curriculum to tie in with the exhibition. So we've had thousands of school children go through the exhibit this summer, but the curriculum will continue on. We developed a curriculum with Chicago Public Schools, and we're hoping to take that to other cities as well. We raised $2.5 million in corporate funding, with probably match that with in-kind donations. And I think most importantly was just that we had several million people over the course of the summer come to the exhibit and walk away with a sense of, you know, wow, there's so many solutions to this problem, and it's not, you know, we did, NPR did a clip on this, and I was happy or not, but they had interviewed a woman who said, well, I don't believe in global warming, but I saw the globes, and I think I'll start recycling. So we'll take what we can get. But overall, it was a great project, and I think there's a lot of people in this room who were on our advisory board or sponsors, and I thank all of you for your help.
Thank you, Wendy. There's a clean energy revolution happening in around the world and in many developing countries, and the front line of that is Rolando Bunster, who is going to tell us about his CGI commitment.
Thank you, David. Basic Energy, our company, is a diversified multinational company. It is not a very big company, but we've been growing it, and the objectives have been primarily to look for projects, acquisitions, or even development projects where we can make a change. Recently, in the first CGI, we committed to install in the Dominican Republic a wind farm. We have now brought 5 windmills into the Dominican Republic, manufactured by Vestas. And this is part of a 120-megawatt project that is being developed. We will be installing in an area called Juancho, which is about 40 kilometers south of Barahona, near the Haitian border, 120 megawatts, where we intend to sell about 40% of that power into Haiti. And the reason we look for these types of projects is because not only are they very sound from an economic point of view, but they do generate enormous amounts of goodwill and carbon credits and things that can be used to help finance and close the financial model. In last year's CGI, I committed to buying a existing power plant in the Dominican Republic that was owned by Goldman Sachs and a group of investors. This power plant had been built, a state-of-the-art power plant located, 300 megawatts located near the town of San Pedro de Macorís. And here, this power plant was not properly generating because it was designed to run on diesel fuel. And it was a plant that had the ability to be converted to natural gas. So we acquired this plant in December of this year, of this past year, and we are now converting it to natural gas by building a pipeline to a natural gas terminal that is owned by AES. And there we will convert the engines by changing the burners, etc. This will, instead of generating power with a fossil fuel that is contaminating, which was diesel and which is 4 times as expensive as natural gas, will save the country $10 million a month in energy costs. Additionally, we acquired a few years ago a power plant in Argentina, which was running. Actually, it wasn't even running. It was a power plant acquired from Colorado Power, and this power plant is now being converted to a combined cycle, so we will take about 60 megawatts of additional power just from the exhaust gases. This will entitle the company to about $3 million a year in carbon credits. This again is another way that our company is looking for ways to take existing assets or developing assets and making them more energy efficient and ecologically friendly. So essentially, our company now is embarked in a very interesting project, which is building a transmission line from the Dominican Republic to Haiti, and this would allow Haiti to turn off some very old fossil plants and be able to have electricity at one-half the cost that it currently has. And our final project, which we are developing and we hope to start this year, by the beginning of next year, is an ethanol project in partnership with Alco, a Belgian company, And this will be a 25 to 30 million gallon per year ethanol project in the Dominican Republic. And this will use 11,000 hectares of sugarcane. So we are embarked on looking for clean energy. We're embarked on looking for new projects that provide clean energy and energy solutions for the developing world. Thank you.
But CGI is about promises made and promises kept. There's one final company whose commitment I would like to recognize here and have them tell you about their follow-through. That's Swiss Re. And our speaker is Roger Ferguson, the chairman of Swiss Re America, a distinguished career at the Fed and McKinsey and other places. Roger.
David, thank you very much for that kind introduction. Let me just say one word about Swiss Re, since we may not be a household name, but we are an important name. Swiss Re is the world's biggest reinsurance company. It means that we provide insurance to insurance companies. And consequently, we are a key element, I think, of the risk-bearing, risk-sharing capacity that makes modern society work. We've been focused on climate change for two decades or more. And on behalf of my colleague, Jacques Aigrin, our CEO, is here, and Ivo Menzinger, who is leading this, I'd like to report on two initiatives over the last 2 years. The first is the European Clean Energy Fund. At the annual meeting 2 years ago in 2005, Swiss Re committed to launch a 250 million euro clean energy fund. We are both sponsor and also anchor investor. The fund is designed to provide capital for clean energy infrastructure such as wind, biomass, combined heat and power, and other energy efficiency investments in Europe. Unfortunately, in life, there's sometimes bad news and good news. The bad news is that we did not raise the 250 million euro that we thought. The good news is that we raised 350 million euro, exceeding our original target by 50%. So you may applaud that if you'd like. In 2005, this was one of the largest, this was in fact the largest commitment at the CGI, and we were very pleased to be honored by President Clinton. So what has happened since then? I've indicated the number already. In addition to that, the United Nations Economic Commission for Europe has awarded the fund a mandate under the Energy Efficiency 21 project. This qualifies the fund as an accredited investment vehicle within the UN system. It allows the fund to participate in special project financing initiatives, and importantly, it receives UN grant money for Kyoto Protocol and climate change-related projects. To date, we have deployed about 25% of the fund's capital, supporting projects such as a portfolio of 45 wind farms. We heard about one in Asia and in Latin America. We have one across Europe, and also a bioethanol plant in France. So the fund clearly indicates that private sector can do good while also doing well. Let me go to the second initiative that we announced last year. We're describing this as our COU2, Reduce and Gain program. Under this initiative, which is a five-year initiative, Swiss Re will offer to each one of our over 10,000 employees globally a company-sponsored amount of approximately $4,000 for a personal investment that reduces carbon emissions. Eligible investments vary from country to country depending on what's appropriate in each region and country, include such things as hybrid cars, solar panels, heat plants, the retrofitting heat pumps, the retrofitting of houses, or volunteer days for carbon sequestration projects. By adapting to different circumstances around the globe, we are able to maximize the program's local utility and also, we believe, its impact. Even more than the actual CO2 savings, this has been a very exciting effort to engage and educate our employees on a subject that is important to us as a company, as I've indicated. And the results show how engaged they've become. In the first 9 months of this project, just this year, more than 300 employees received a payout under the program. This is truly remarkable if you think about it, because what we're asking for is very, very long-term planning projects at an individual level. And what we've seen thus far is three things seem particularly popular. In the U.S., hybrid cars, not surprisingly. We've sponsored already 53 of those in the U.S., in Switzerland, public transportation passes. We've supported about 122 of those. And we've had paid leave for about 30 of our employees in Mexico and Hong Kong who volunteered to plant trees. The most exciting part of this is not those specific numbers, but rather the enthusiasm that this has generated within our group. We are, as I said, a global company. So in New York, in Zurich, Munich, Hong Kong, and Manchester, employees have organized, about 1,000 or so employees have come together for specific COU2 promotional events that have been part of the educational efforts, if you will. At these events, we've had external experts explaining how emissions can be reduced. Solution providers displayed their eligible products, and employees came. And that included members of our own Swiss Re Executive Committee. And we shared our own experiences in reducing emissions. And more events are planned going forward. The nice news is that this issue with respect to emissions reduction has become what one might describe as water fountain talk within Swiss Re. Many employees have said that the innovative programs make them proud to work for Swiss Re. And in fact, one of our colleagues here in the U.S., as you know, we have what we call vanity license plates, has a vanity license plate that says COU2, and he's used that for the hybrid car that he purchased partially with our funds. I should also say, in my own household, I shocked and surprised my wife by changing out all of our light bulbs to compact for fluorescent lights. Don't applaud me, applaud my wife. The other good news about this is that our program is generating interest beyond Swiss Re. Several other companies have inquired about it and asked us to share our experience with a view of replicating the idea. And in Switzerland, one of our car dealers now offers a special discount to Swiss Re employees to make the purchase of hybrid car even more attractive, adding a lower cost to the $4,000 in Swiss francs equivalent that we are providing. And one of the limousine service providers that we use has purchased hybrid cars after we announced that we prefer service from those sorts of cars. So I'm looking forward, as I said, this is a 5-year commitment, and if the sponsors will have us back, I'm looking forward to keeping you updated on this and also the commitments that we've made for this year. Thank you very, very much.
In 2005 at our conference, when our climate discussions were in a much smaller room, I remember very well a friend of mine pulling me aside, saying, "David, is that Brad Pitt sitting over there at the table talking?" And I looked over, and indeed it was. And I noticed the seriousness with which he was engaged in conversation, and the same in the session after that. And I was thrilled to learn about 12 months later that from those conversations came an entire program for the sustainable rebuilding of New Orleans. Brad Pitt is, of course, a famous movie star. He is also a social activist who has taken on projects in the environment, in poverty, in AIDS, and in Africa in particular. He is the star of, and has appeared in 12 Monkeys, The Mexican, Ocean's 11, Ocean's 12, Ocean's 13, Mr. and Mrs. Santa twice, People Magazine's Sexiest Man in the World, ladies and gentlemen, Brad Pitt.
Well, that was just cruel.
I got to say, it's nice to be sitting in a room with a bunch of people that are still not debating the existence of climate change. And I applaud you all for your interest and your individual efforts. We're here to announce, my partners and I, Bill McDonough. Bill, are you around here somewhere? Bill, can you raise your hand? Great. I'm sure most of you know Bill. At least by reputation, is one of the voices at the forefront of sustainable design. Also, I'd like to introduce Tom Darden of Cherokee Investments. Tom's right here. Great. We are here to announce a sustainable rebuilding effort for the Lower Ninth Ward of New Orleans. We are calling it Make It Right. That's been 2 years since the initial catastrophe, and I have to say the rebuilding effort is abysmal, and nowhere has it felt worse than in low-income areas. We chose to begin in the Lower Ninth because we see it as an icon for New Orleans. It's notable for its contributions to our music scene, our civil rights movement. It's got a great spirit, and it has the least likely shot at a successful return. Now, these people, they're not unfamiliar with being left behind. After the flooding, they were the last to be rescued. They were the last to get FEMA trailers. Which were rendered useless because they didn't even have utilities. They were given one-way tickets out of there. Their families were dispersed. They were broken up. And they remain there still to this day. These are people who did everything right. They held jobs. They bought homes. They raised their families in these homes. They sent their kids to school. And all that has been obliterated. It's gone. And they need some help. Now, Katrina's been labeled the greatest natural disaster to ever recorded in American history. This is not completely correct. I think what should be made clear is that Katrina was a man-made disaster. Climate change is a... Climate change is certainly a man-made problem. You have the Gulf's heating up. The storms are becoming more frequent, more tumultuous. But it's also a man-made problem due to decades of irresponsible handling of the levees by the Corps of Engineers, reckless cutting of canals that have led to the deterioration of the wetlands, which was once the barrier for this city. This city is not actually on the coast. If we don't do something soon, it soon will be. But, I'm loathe to say anything bad about engineers. I find it such a noble profession. But in this case, they made horrible mistakes. They let these people down, and mistakes that proved fatal. Over 1,800 dead, $50 billion in damages, $180 billion in lost revenue. All of this was unnecessary. It didn't need to happen. And we feel that there is a responsibility to right that wrong. Now, in this responsibility, though, we find opportunity. We started to see New Orleans as a microcosm for our greater problem, the global problem. And certainly if anyone understands the direct repercussions, the firsthand repercussions of climate change, it is the people of the Gulf Coast. So we realized we certainly couldn't change what had happened. We couldn't bring back all that was lost, but maybe we could provide something better, meaning a better way to build. Maybe we could build a better home for these people. Maybe we take this catastrophe and turn it into something positive. Maybe we can bring intelligent design to New Orleans. And please, I don't want any confusion. I'm not talking about creationism. Can we find a man-made solution? We looked at this. We looked at creating a template, creating a proving ground for something that not only work in New Orleans, but would work along the Gulf Coast and even in the greater world abroad. So this has been our focus. 40% of all our pollution, our carbon emissions, comes from our buildings. This is staggering. It comes from our creation and the operation of our buildings. We have to rethink this. Something's got to change. Now, the amazing thing about nature, and Bill speaks most eloquently about this, is that it doesn't pollute itself. It doesn't poison itself. There is no concept of waste in nature. What one thing discards becomes food for something else. Now, our buildings can operate the same way. This is the direction we need to be heading. The sun's right there. There's wind out there. The water's over there. All this is there to be harnessed, for us to integrate ourselves into this ecosystem. It's exciting stuff. There's amazing things going on out there, and we're trying to bring that to New Orleans. But the first question I run into, and I love this question, because, I'm asked, what the hell do low-income people care about green building? And what we found is they care most. These are the people that benefit, have initial benefits, more than all of us. I cut my teeth here, as was mentioned, on a project in partnership with Global Green, where we are in the process of building a single and multi-family housing complex in the Holy Cross area. And I visited that house last month, and I'm thrilled to tell you that the family that will live in this house will have their energy bills cut by 75%, their water bills by 50%. Now imagine that monthly burden that is relieved on this family, that it can go to other things. This is also a house that is built with non-toxic materials. There's great air quality and ventilation and light, which these things are always the first things to get sacrificed in affordable housing. So another one of our goals here is to bring green technology to the affordability level and still not have it look like a Prius. I own two of them. It's all right. Now, if you've never been to New Orleans, it's an amazing place. It's an incredible culture. There's a great spirit and a fantastic way of life. And one of the stories I think best illustrates that for me was the night of the National Football Conference Championships this last year. It was the Saints against the Bears, one game away from the Super Bowl. A lot of pride in the city, and the Saints lost that game. And sometime later, outside my window, I start hearing a commotion, and I go to the window, and I look outside, and I see a parade going by. And I lean in a little closer, and I realize what they're chanting is, "We're number two! We're number two! We're number two!" And it told me that these people will not be beaten. So right now, there are 12,000 applicants trying to get home to the lower Ninth Ward. The problem is they most likely will not have the finances. They're being incentivized to come too, I'd like to add. They probably will not have the finances to, one, build what they had before, and certainly not to build safely. And we must be honest. These levees are not in the condition they should be, not up to American ingenuity standards, and the place will flood again. So we want to ensure that they are built safely. Now, the thing about the Ninth Ward that not many people realize is it's only 2 to 6 feet below sea level. This is doable. This is not that difficult. But we need to ensure that this attention is paid to these families so they are not set up for a greater catastrophe. All right, I'm going to tell you where we're at. We are, in the past year, We started meeting with the community, building their trust, and we sought out our architects. Right now we have 13 architects who are finalizing designs. Some of the greatest minds in architecture we called, names like Thomas Main of Morphosis, Shigeru Ban, David Ajay. 13 in total from the local, the national, the international forum to all come descend on New Orleans because they believed as we did. They've given up their time and they've wanted to address this problem. Our mandate was that these homes would be sustainable, equitable, affordable, safe, and beautiful. So throughout the summer, they've been working with the community and I with the goal to define this neighborhood as a neighborhood of distinction and diversity and be true. We want to be sure that we maintain true to the spirit of the community, to their culture. So I've seen these designs. They're fantastic. There's some really amazing solutions here. It's really exciting. I can't wait to see them implemented. So what we are doing is we are committing to starting with 150 homes. I don't see why we can't do 1,000, but this is where we're starting. We are prepared to break ground by the end of the year, but we need your help. Myself and our partner, Steve Bing, are issuing a bit of a challenge to CGI members this year. For any contribution that you make to the Right Make It Right project, we will match dollar for dollar any and every single contribution up to $10 million. A little applause. I know it's cool. Now, just to give you a little perspective too, each house, for every $150,000, you will be putting a family into a home. But what I hope our commitment shows you how much we believe in this project, that we believe that this little spot on the globe can actually help advance the, the knowledge, the discussion, and the practice of green technology, green architecture. And I also want you to know that if you are to commit to any house, it's important to say that you are building a house of respect, a house that is respectful to the people who will reside in them, to the families, respectful to their hard-earned paycheck, respectful to their health, respectful to the environment, and respectful to our future. I have to say this is only going to get done if we make it happen. Know that this is a justice issue, as is climate change. We need to redirect things. So that's it. That's me. You can find us at www.makeitrightnola.org, and also you can talk to myself, Bill McDonough, Tom Darden, and our representative Trevor Nielsen if you have any questions. Okay? Thank you for hearing us out.
Just in case anybody didn't hear that, dollar for dollar, Steve Bing and Brad Pitt up to $10 million.
Okay. One more thing. I think we have a little announcement from our friends at Virgin. Shy?
Richard just called earlier.
Okay. Get a mic.
So I guess, you know, after $3 billion, $150,000 is not too much. So we'll sponsor the first one. This is part of Richard's commitment to poverty and global warming. And with the Virgin Green Fund, we'll support as much as we can in the guidance on the green side. But I think we're probably going to learn more than we're going to give. But, you know, you've got the first one. So anybody want to match
Great.
That?
Thank you very much. We'll take
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our luncheon. Our first session will start here promptly at 1:30.